Good morning, Great Oaks family.
Good morning.
Good morning, online. If you know who I am, I'm Pastor Chase, and I'm so glad you're joining us here this morning. Let me start us off with a fun question this morning. What would you do if I gave you 100 grand? What would you do with it? Talk to your neighbor, talk to yourselves. What would you do with $100,000 right now? Go ahead, talk to your neighbor. Online, feel free to type it in the chat and let the online host know who's joining you, what you'd do with the $100,000. All right, here we go. If you don't know, today we're talking about everyone's favorite topic. Talking about money. And I want you to hear from right from the get-go, just as much as we don't like hearing about money, I don't like preaching on money. All right, so bear with me this morning. We're going to strap in. However, though, as we talk about what would you do with $100,000, go ahead and look under your chair. There might be a dot there. That means you get the $100,000. So go ahead and look now. No one believe. That's so sad. No one believe me. I bet Second Service does. Okay. So, guys, as we look at money this morning, I want you to know where we're going to be at. If you're new here, we're right now in James, week 5. We've been walking through the book of James, and what we're going to look at this morning is probably what I consider the harshest writing inside the letter that James writes. And we're going to get there in a second. But if you've missed any of the sermons from this series, catch them online. And then next week is our last week on James. And Pastor Daniel's going to do a great job closing us with just patience and steadfastness. But let's go ahead and pray for the message this morning. Bow with me. God, we just thank you so much as we come this time. God, as we come into your house this morning, as we open the word, may we grab from that what you want us to. God, may it be your words and not mine this morning as we dive into the book of James and just talk about, honestly, what response we do with money. Pray this on your name. Amen. All right. Now, let me go ahead and give the disclaimer. If you're here this morning and maybe it is your first or second time, maybe you've been here a long time, there's a reason why, and let me go ahead and tell you, we're going to do a sermon on money. There's not going to be a special offering. There's not going to be some call for you to like give right now in the moment. And let me go ahead and say this from the minute one. If you feel in this sermon like, oh, I feel that Chase is guilting us into give, I'm actually going to go this bold and say, then I don't want you to give. All right? So we're going to look at what the text says, and we're going to look about what that should speak into our heart about money. So here we go. James chapter 5, starting in verse 1, says this. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and their corrosion will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasure in the last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying against you. And the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on the earth in luxury and in self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you.
I told you today's text was not fun.
So let me go ahead and start with this. The first thing you need to know, as Paul closed James chapter 4 last week, this is James, half-brother of Jesus, writing, and the audience is the church, but what James is writing about here in the first 6 verses of James 5, he's writing about the world's love of money, okay? And he's warning the church as they read this, here's what you need to be careful of and not fall into. So that's the textual background as James is writing this. Now, you might go ahead and hear this and be like, oh, thank God, this does not apply to me because I read that first line, and here's what that first line said. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. You're like, man, he's talking to the rich people, and I'm Poe, so we're good. All right, before we go that far and you think, oh, hey, I am off on this, let me go ahead and say this. If you make greater than $34,000 a year in salary, you are in the top 5% of global earners. Okay? So most likely fits a lot of us in the room. We can consider ourselves wealthy and rich on that standard. Now, if you get nothing else today, I need you to get this from the sermon. Wealth is not the sin. Our desire for it is. So hear me on that, because before anybody leaves, you'll be like, oh, Chase said money is of the devil. I did not say that. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying having nice things is a sin. What I'm saying is this: wealth is not the sin, our desire for it is. And the reason that's the problem is, I fully believe this today, we have become discipled by the world. And that's what James is hitting at in James chapter 5, is James is writing this saying, hey, this is what the world looks like, church. This is what the world looks like. This is what they care about. This is what they want. And I believe today in our culture, we have become discipled by the world when it comes to money. And they know it. And they make sure we lean into it. For example, how many of us have got our Christmas shopping already done? Oh, really? Oh, sweet. Nice. All right. A couple of us. How many of us have probably overspent already? Okay. The world knows how we handle money, especially in our Western culture today. For example, $500 billion a year is solely spent on marketing products to the American consumer. $500 billion a year spent just marketing to the consumer by this product. How many of us in here have ever just bought a product because we thought it looked cool at one time and it was practically useless? Anybody? I'm going to tell you right now. I have, and I've talked about this before in the sermon, I have this thing, and it's actually in our bedroom. It's called the Love Sack. That's a big beanbag chair from Costco. Probably the most impulsive purchase I've ever had in my life, and it's utterly useless. Here's why I say that. It's cool to jump on. Then I need like a forklift to get me out of it, but besides that... But that's what we do. We see things, it markets to us, and man, we want it. Church, whether or not you know this, the average American is exposed to 4,000 plus advertisements a day. And that's the low end. That's why I said plus. The stat actually is 4 to 10,000. And you may be like, well, how is that possible? Let me show you how that's possible. Yeah. That's all we do. All day. Oh, got nothing on the calendar? Hold on, let me sit down. Let's see here. Yep, scrolling through. And we watch reels, and we watch video, and we surf social media. And then, you know, a couple weeks ago, Pastor Chris did a great job talking about our cell phones. And then we were surprised as we search things and we talk about things. Like, man, my phone knows me because this advertisement speaks to me. Because it's listening to you, and it sees what you're typing. And then we wonder why we buy it. Guys, companies are spending $500 billion a year to the American consumer. And James 5 is saying, man, the love of this, the drive for this is not okay. In fact, we can't preach James 5 without looking at Paul's writing in 1 Timothy. As 1 Timothy has this, in 1 Timothy 6, starting in verse 6, is this: but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Now, when we read this text, sometimes we're like, man, that last verse about the love of money is root of all evil, I don't think that's the most powerful verse. That first one, verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Church, I'm just going to throw the punch today and say this: we are not content people. We're not. I think we used to be. At some point in our life. I think we used to be more excited about things, and I think it's something we've developed because the world has discipled us and the culture has discipled us to want more and to gain more. Let me give you an example. When I was 15, I was excited, like every 15-year-old is, that freedom is almost here. I'm going to have a car. And so my parents were like, well, you got to find something. You already have a job. At that point, from working on the farm, and I was working at McDonald's for $5.15 an hour, woohoo. And so I was looking for a car. And then all of a sudden, the newspaper, through marketing, had this awesome deal. There was a car dealership nearby that was doing an amazing sale. They were going to slash the price of every car on the lot on a given Saturday morning. Every single car on the lot was going to get a price slash on it. And then their advertisement said this: we are going to sell 3 cars on this lot for $9. Well, $9? That's only an hour and a half of work. So my parents were working that day, and so therefore I called the person that I'm like, all right, I need somebody that can drive me and that's legal age to buy a car. So called up my grandma. Grandma at the ripe age, probably at that point, I don't know, late 60s, early 70s, if you're listening, I apologize. And she went with me, and the deal was this. Everyone had to be at the entrance of the car lot, and then they would announce when it was going to start, and you ran to the cars, and whoever was sitting in the driver's seat got the first yes or no on the deal. Oh, it's a foot race. Luckily, I wasn't doing this now, okay? It's 15. I looked around, and I'm like, okay, that's an old Plymouth Duster. That's going to be one of those cars that's $9. And then my eye caught it. This beautiful boat-sized maroon 1994 Mercury Cougar. I'm like, that's it. That is it. Ran there, got the driver's seat. 15 minutes later, grandma gets there. I put her in the driver's seat. And I'm like, all right, car comes, they come around, it's $9. They didn't tell me in the advertisement, it cost me $59 because the title cost $50, whatever. And I was so ecstatic. Even driving home in a car that, you know, the head gasket was blown and there was no brakes, I was super ecstatic. And I remember loving that car at 16 and 17. My friends and I, that was the coolest thing ever. I was completely content with this car. I'll be honest with you, pretty sure I wouldn't be content with it today. In fact, with our level of discontentment, I think not only has culture spoken that to us, we've even spoken that to our kids. Let me give you an example of that. So Megan and I, we both have cars that are 2014s, love it because they're paid off. And so there's times when we go to school events, and there's times I park in the student lot, and I'm either in my wife's 2014 Jeep or my 2014 Nissan, and I pull in the student lot, and I look around, and I'm like, how in the world do I have one of the worst cars in the student parking lot? But church, I think not only culture, we have started putting into our kids, hey, the nicest things are for you. The nicest things, we want you to have these. And we're not doing a good job teaching responsibility and what it means to be content and earn things. Church, wealth is not the sin. Our desire for it is. And maybe speaking to some parents here today, our desire for our kids to have it can be sinful. That's the issue. We are not a content people. James 5:5, as James is hitting this, he says, you have lived on this earth in luxury and self-indulgence. In luxury and self-indulgence. One of the greatest litmus tests to how you're living out your faith, or how I'm living out my faith, is by how we spend our money. Where is it going? Where is that going? Church, do we not hear from Paul last week as he preached this? James 4:14, yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little and then vanishes. It's been said throughout from the other staff members and pastors that have preached on stage and those commentary writers that write on the book of James is that the book of James is actually the practicality of the Sermon on the Mount. So as we go there, let's look at that. Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 19, says this. Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. All right, maybe I need to lose the jacket. That's fine. Got to show off my Packers logo. All right. Yeah, all right. So, church, as we talk about this morning, we look at the Sermon on the Mount, you know, these are words from Jesus. Do not lay up for yourself treasures on this earth. I can't help but talk about for a minute that maybe when we talk about wealth is not the sin, but our desire for it is, we like to store things up. We like to hoard things. Sometimes we treat our money like the toilet paper aisle before the storm happens, and we just start hoarding everything. Maybe the definition of wealth has changed. For example, Charles Schwab released this. The average American considers themselves wealthy today if they have over $2.5 million in available assets. That's not including retirement or real estate. So pretty much what it's saying is if I have over $2.5 million in, you know, things I can move, then I'll consider myself wealthy. Church, where is our heart on that? Where is our heart with that? Because here's what I can tell you. Ecclesiastes 5 from the Old Testament says this, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. Now, before you hear something that I'm not preaching, I am not saying you don't be a good steward of your finances. I'm not saying do not prepare for the future, and I'm not saying don't prepare for a day when you're not going to have a job and you're going to be retired. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, what is our idea of wealth? Are we content with what we have? Are we striving to make more and more just because we don't think we have enough? Because if that is our mentality, church, we're never going to have enough. And that's the argument in James chapter 5. Because people were so corrupt and wanting more, they were being corrupt and they didn't pay people well. They were shorting the people working in the harvest field. I think that's our culture today. We don't think we'll ever have enough. One of the basic statistics on that is this. In the last 50 years, the American home size and square footage has tripled. And you might be like, well, geez, Chase, had more kids. No, we didn't. You might be like, geez, Chase, we brought in our in-laws. No, you didn't. No, I didn't. Guys, we want more. And more and more. And my problem with that and the problem from Scripture with that is, can we not be content? Because when we're not content, I have a feeling that we're not trusting God's provision. And in turn, I think that means we don't acknowledge His blessing. Let me give you an example. And before you think I'm judging you, I'm judging myself too. How many times have we seen someone be blessed financially, and we're like, really, God, them? Come on. I work 10 more hours a week than that person. We struggle when others might be blessed, especially in this category. And I think that comes from our heart of wanting to have more and more because we are not content. One of my favorite theologians, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, says it this way. Earthly goods deceive the human heart into believing that they give it security and freedom from worry. But in truth, they are what cause anxiety. Let me read that again. Earthly goods deceive the human heart into believing that they give it security and freedom from worry. But in truth, they are what cause anxiety. I know there's many of us in here that worry about money. Because we worry about something that's 30 years from now. I don't know if I'll ever have enough. My goodness, the government's probably going to raise taxes by 35% by then. I don't know if I'm going to have enough. And we worry, and we worry, and we worry. Church, when is the last time we sat down with our money and the first thing we did was prayed to God? When's the last time when we wrote a budget out? And maybe you're in a season of your life. I hear you. I've been there too. You're like, well, we got to tighten the belt. We can't be like the federal government and spend more than we make. We just can't do it. So we got to tighten the belt a little bit. How many of us in those moments have said, you know what? We need to pray. I don't think we do. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe everybody in this room does, and I'm just the one that's the foolish one. I don't know. But church, I think that's one of the biggest problems we have. And the reason this love of money, or the reason that this desire of lack of contentment and wanting more is happening sometimes, is because we're not committing to God in prayer. And I think what we're not doing, we're not recognizing the simple truth. God has already blessed us. Something that we say a lot here on the stage at Great Oaks is this. We believe everything we have is from God and comes from God. That we say it all the time when we do tithes and offerings. And I think we struggle with that. I know I do. Because I say things like this. I work hard for my money. Who's ever said that? Anybody? I'm the only sinner in this room. Okay, cool. All right. How many in here have been like, man, I've earned this. I have earned this. How many of us in here remember when we first got married? We're like, all right, no longer is it mine. It's now ours. And realize that was a hard conversation to have. You know what makes that conversation a whole lot easier? Is saying, all right, we're getting married. Guess what? Our money is already God, so we got to listen to that guy. Guys, we get so possessive with things. And I believe that's what the heart of this message is from James 5. Wealth is not the sin. Our desire for it, our heart for it, our motive behind it, that's the problem. We don't pray about it. We don't talk well about it. We just want more and more and more. Now, for some of us in the room this morning, maybe you are struggling financially this morning. And maybe you do have these fears and worries. And hear me on this. Talk to somebody. Have them pray with you about it. But I'm going to say for the majority of us in here, that are worried sometimes about money, that worry is coming from us making bad choices. That worry is coming from a desire that is not healthy. And that's what Bonhoeffer was getting at. But in truth, they are what cause anxiety. These earthly goods deceive the human heart. And church, I fear if we don't change, if we don't realize that what this can be, that money can be used by the enemy, I have a Romans 1 problem with this. If you don't know what Romans 1 is about, it is about when people get so depraved and they get so fixated on sin, God will just give them over to it. And I worry as a culture, that is where we've gotten with money, is that, you know what, if we don't make some changes, if we don't realize that there is contentment in Christ alone, he's just going to let us go into it. Until we just come back to him as the Israelites had to. So what do we do with this morning? You might be sitting here and be like, all right, well, now I feel great. What do I do? Church, let's start with step one. Number one, find contentment. Find contentment. No one likes that word for some reason, and I don't know why. I don't know why. 1 Timothy 6:6. But godliness with contentment is great gain. Godliness with contentment is great gain. I guess the heart of this is are we okay with just saying, you know what, God? You got us, and I'm content with that. Back when I read 1 Timothy chapter 6, if you didn't hear this part of the message, let me go ahead and read a section of it again. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. What he's saying there is this. God, all we need, food and clothing. I don't know if we'd be content with just that. I know sometimes I'm not. Would we be content with just those things being provided? And what we know from the Gospels is that God does provide. So we need to find contentment. The next thing we do, what do? Step two, we be wise. We find contentment and we be wise. Let's be honest. Proverbs tells us this: the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is the slave of the lender. Now, before I go into some ridiculous tangent on managing money, just let me say this. Going into debt outside of your home is a dangerous thing. And I would caution every single one of us on it. We need to be wise. Church, sometimes in order for us to think that we need more money, we're just like, hey, in order to get more money, we gotta spend more money. We gotta throw more out. That's what we gotta do. Be wise. Do not give yourself over to that. Because if you are trapped in debt, guys, I'm gonna let you hear me on this. Those are chains of bondage. And there's things you won't be able to do because of that. There's a reason why when you're in ministry and we're in Bible college, we don't allow missionaries to go overseas in the mission field to have debt. We don't. They have to clear that out first. Because there can be nothing that hinders them from the gospel. And they can't have that on their mind the whole time they're over trying to reach a people. Is my goodness, I ain't making an income doing this. I'm getting financial support. And now what I have to do, I have to ask for more financial support because I've put myself into more debt in order to pay that so I can do the ministry that I've been called to do. Church, if you find yourself right now today drowning in debt and not knowing where to do with that, where to go, do me one big favor. Talk to me. Talk to Pastor Paul. We have resources and we have things that can help with that. And we have studies and groups that meet about that. And we want to help you and come around you and just love you. So what do we do with this? We find contentment. And number two, we be wise. Number three, what do we do with this? We be generous. Now, before anybody says it, everybody's going to be like, ah, here's the bait and switch. Guys, the reason why we should care about this subject is because we need to be generous. Why? I think the best example of it is this. We serve a generous God. I mean a very generous God. Who not only has blessed us with everything we have, but more importantly, he sent us his son. Out of the heart of generosity, wanting to be in community with us. So on a practical level, why are we generous as believers? Because we serve a God who is generous. And we want to emulate Christ and be sacrificing anything we can at any time to help somebody else out. Luke chapter 12 says this, "Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with treasure in heaven that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there will your heart also be." Here's a news update. As we collect money and we invest and invest and invest, and as we try to bring in more money and more money, I don't know if we know this or not. We can't take it with us. Just throwing it out there. It doesn't go with us. We don't get to heaven and God looks at us and being like, man, you should have actually worked in the stock market. Phenomenal. That doesn't happen. We can't take it with us. But you know what we can do? Even though that money doesn't go with this, do never, ever underestimate this. The money that we are generous with might help get someone there. Do not miss that. The money that we might be generous with might help get someone there. There are mission partners across the globe that depend on financial resources in order to reach the lost. There's Bible translators translating scripture into unknown languages, and they have to have financial resources in order to do that. Never underestimate what that can do. The hard part of Luke chapter 12 is this: sell your possessions and give to the needy. James 5, the warning from James 5. You have lived luxuriously on the earth and you have indulged yourselves. You fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. And what that refers to, anytime you see the day of slaughter, refer to Old Testament, New Testament, is the coming of the Lord in the last days. And that's what we've done. If there is any people group that should care about the poor, it is the church. Why? Throughout the entire gospel message, who we see Jesus encounter and speak to, bend down, have conversation with, are down, out, struck out people who are in desperate need. And I have a worried church that we do not hold that mantle well today. Another stat I'll give you today, and it's the one that eats me alive. Two-thirds of believers, two-thirds of Christians, when they encounter a poor person, their first thought is this: they should just be working harder. Hear me. That is not okay, and never will it be okay. Our first thought as the church should be, how can I pray for that person? How can I engage in that person, have a conversation like Jesus would, and say, man, what's going on? Could they have made bad financial decisions? Sure. But our call as the church is to meet people with the love of Christ, not some judgment of disdain. Let me tell you a story about a guy named Mark. I think I have a picture of Mark. A couple years ago, I got the ability to go out to San Francisco and just lead a ministry talking with homeless people. I meet with a guy named Mark. Next to me, actually, at that point, she's probably a 16-year-old student from student ministry. Because I will tell you this, from my own years in the church, students are way better at helping homeless people than adults are. And so as Ann and I are sitting there talking to Mark, I'm hearing Mark's story. He's been living in a tent for almost a decade. And I look over, and Mark has got these toolboxes, and I mean toolboxes upon toolboxes, and inside these are tools, which I do know what they are, and I was like, these are worth a good amount of money. And he looks at me and says, this is my living. This is how I try to give back, because I'm a mechanic. I lost my job a long time ago. The city has bulldozed my tent three times over now. Tools that I have been stolen. And in that moment, as much as I was supposed to be there to minister to Mark, he ministered to me. Because he looks at me and says this: thank you for just stopping and having a conversation with me. That cut me to the heart. Because how many times, church, do we drive by people, walk by people, and just cast them off? I'll be honest with you, thank God Jesus doesn't do that. Thank God that's not how we've been dealt with. Guys, wealth is not a sin. Having great things is not a sin. Having nice things is not a sin. But our desire for it can be. And as I talk to you guys this morning, as we preach this message, I would ask us this: be reflective. Like I said, there's no offering happening. There's no giving moment happening. Here's the only point for the end of this message. Ask ourselves, how are we doing in being content, wise, and generous? And if you don't know how you're doing, go home. Or grab your phone, open the laptop, look at your budget, and see how you're doing at generosity. It's the easiest way to do it. Now, maybe you're in the church here this morning and you're like, woo, I've never been to church before and I don't know what I just experienced. Here's what I want you to hear from me this morning. In this place, we believe in a generous God that loves us with all of his being. So much so that he gave us his son. And the reason we call on the church to be generous is because first, God has been generous with us. And if you've never known that, please see one of our prayer workers on the side. Please see someone out front, because we just want to have a conversation with you about Jesus. And hopefully, if you've gotten anything from here, know this. We're not going to judge you. We're not going to, one, up and down. You'd be like, not really. Not our type of person for Great Oaks. We're not going to do that. Because why? Great Oaks is about connecting everyone with Jesus, community, and purpose. And that just doesn't happen here. Let's change the tone a little bit. A little rough. Let's end with a celebration moment. What do we say? Oh, or not. All right. Hey, so this last month, you know, we're talking about making sure that we are reaching out to those that have lost things, that are those that are just down and out. We had two mission trips that went over to Dominican Republic and one that went to North Carolina. I just want to take a moment to show the church, because honestly, a lot of you guys were generous with that. Some of you in here are wise with finances and God has blessed you and you are generous with that in return. And these things happen because of that. So there's some things we need to celebrate with money and generosity, and that's what we're going to do. So I want you to go ahead and watch the screen. There's some awesome videos. I'm going to see the Dominican Republic first and then North Carolina, and just see how this impacted people. Go ahead.